All right, everyone, welcome back into another live edition of the Patriots Beat podcast here on the CLNS Media Network, which is presented by our wonderful friends over at Prize Picks. We are back after the first week of free agency officially in the books there. It was quiet past few days for the Patriots. They let us go out and enjoy our St. Paddy's Day weekend, but we did get one little small signing yesterday, and then we have some other, you know, news and stuff from the past few days to kind of recap some Patriots ties, things that will could and might affect the team going forward. But we'll start with the signing because we finally got a wide receiver. It wasn't the one everyone was hoping for in Calvin Ridley, and one that not a lot of people I thought even had on their radar as a possibility here. But KJ Osborne from the Minnesota Vikings on a 1 year, I believe it was $4 million. I don't think we have the guaranteed structures and everything yet. But
no, but if the total number is $4 million, I mean, it's an idea.
It's a lower money deal, obviously, you know, but a guy like KJ Osborne, who's been, you know, a pretty reliable, solid wide receiver 3-4 behind Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, Adam Thielen in Minnesota the past few years, but kind of a good, tough, reliable veteran, and just now he's in the Pats receiving room, so we'll see what he provides.
Yeah, I've always liked KJ Osborne. Like, I think he's a solid player. He's a solid complementary receiver. Like, he's a good third option when you can get him one-on-one coverage consistently because you have Justin Jefferson on the other side, right? Jordan Addison. So this is kind of where I've been, like, with guys like Kendrick Bourne and even guys like Jacoby Myers. They're not bad players. And if you can get them one-on-one matchups, they'll win them more often than not. How are you getting them one-on-one matchups? How are you getting KJ Osborne, who, by the way, his name is Kendrick. So then I have Kendrick Bourne and Kendrick Osborne. KJ is Kendrick Jr. How are you getting KJ Osborne one-on-ones? How are you ensuring Kendrick Bourne gets one-on-ones? And it's who is going to dictate the coverage? Who is the guy that the defense can't ignore instead of just rotating to whoever the hot hand is? And that's been the question for years. That's been the question going back to the 2021 season, really, when they brought in Bourne and Nelson Agholor, and those guys were kind of struggling once defenses settled down and got a look at what the offensive system was. So, like, I'm not going to sit here and bitch and moan. He's not a bad player. They got him for no money. So, I mean, that's good. But this isn't like a high-level signing. This is not an instead of Calvin Ridley signing. They still need the coverage dictating wide receiver until they have him. Can the offense be better? Yes. But without that kind of guy, there's a cap. And before everybody, you know, starts screaming at me about Marvin Harrison Jr., without a certain kind of quarterback, there's also a cap on the offense. And I would argue a much lower ceiling on the offense without a quarterback. So we know they have more needs to fill. And that's what makes missing out on a guy like Ridley frustrating, or not going after a guy like Keenan Allen or Mike Williams. I almost said Mike Evans. Keenan Allen or Mike Williams so frustrating is they could have had that guy. And then you look at this and you say, boom, okay. You know, Mike Evans, assuming he's healthy, Kendrick Bourne, assuming he's healthy, and KJ Osborne. Like, there's some ifs in there, but it's not bad. That's not bad. That one guy, and it's nothing against Pop Douglas, who obviously I left out of that thing, but he's a slot receiver. He's just not going to have that kind of impact. It's that X guy that truly has. Tyreek Hill's the only slot receiver that I think truly dictates coverage in this league. Not having that guy just changes the entire picture of things. So, and by the way, because I saw this argument too online yesterday, you can like the KJ Osborne signing and still acknowledge they haven't done nearly enough. You can totally say, you know, in a bubble, yeah, I like the player, he's a good player, and then turn around and say, but they're really not going to be able to maximize what he can do because they don't have the other pieces in place. Like, that's, you're allowed to feel both ways about it. Because I mean, that's how I feel. I've always liked KJ Osborne. I always have. But this is a tough situation for him now.
Yeah, he's a good, you know, complimentary piece, good player to have, but, like, you can't just bring in KJ Osborne to this situation right now. You need that guy who kind of can knock everyone else back into, like, the correct role, so you're not asking KJ Osborne or Kendrick Bourne to, like, consistently beat top coverage and be your go-to guy. You need that alpha in the room, so which, unfortunately, there's not one on the free agent market. It was kind of really only Calvin Ridley. Because they didn't, you know, they didn't go for the Keenan Allen trade. They, you know, Mike Evans didn't even reach the market. And then, so it's going to be like the T. Higgins, the trade, or whether you want to get one of these guys in the draft. But yeah, like, I still think, you know, we talked a lot about putting whatever rookie quarterback in a good situation to succeed, and you know, having just another reliable kind of veteran in that room. You know, maybe Kendrick Bourne's not ready at the start of the year with his ACL surgery. So, you know, I think it's you can't have enough of kind of those guys too, but you still need the alpha and the top complementary, or the top alpha to, you know, let those complementary guys fit into their better roles. But what do you think? Does that impact Juju's future at all, do you think?
I mean, I think his future should already – I still think he should decided. Go. Like, yeah, I think that he should already be on the way out. They cut Devontae Parker. You're kind of along the same lines, especially if they draft a couple of guys and they want to get them on the field and develop them. There's just not enough snaps. There's not. So could this hammer at home, you know, signing KJ KJ Osborne, meaning Juju's gone? It could. I think that should have happened independent of this. I think that should have already happened. So not, I mean, if they want to wait until, you know, see if they can trade him, maybe somebody gets hurt in camp. But I'm saying, like, they should already be of the mindset of Juju Smith-Schuster not being a roster lock. Like, that should be how this thing's viewed right now.
Yeah, especially because you still have $50 million in cap space, right?
Right. Like, and if you're not going to spend it, at least eat it.
Yeah, at least, you know, you can create the snaps. So I know it's nine. It's depending when, if it's post June 1, it's not like 9.5, or if they just do it now, it's like 12 million. But they have the money. They don't really have players to spend the money on. So you might as well use it to free up some snaps there for, you know, the other receivers that you hope they add at the draft or through the trade market at some point here. So that was the only other signing, KJ Osborne, from the last time we spoke, which was, we did a show Wednesday. I believe that was our last one. And then we were going to do one Thursday, and then they didn't sign anyone.
Nothing
so
happened. Yeah.
just Osborne on Sunday there. That was the weekend moves. But I don't know, now that we've kind of, you know, taken a step back and, you know, sit on this for a few days, like, has your thought process or your view on what they've done as a whole over the first, you know, week of the new league year here, has it changed at all since the last time we spoke?
No. It's still like, all right, let's see this new draft grading system, and let's see this new draft approach. Cause I mean, if they nail it, they're on track. Like, I'm not going to sit here. I'm not going to be one of these people that's necessarily saying, oh wow, they had this amazing draft, but imagine if they'd also gone out in free agency and blah, 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 blah. You guys can pull this clip. If I become that guy, that'll be embarrassing if I do, but I don't think I will, because it's like, all right, if you hit on like multiple receivers, well, were they going to play? Were they going to play over a guy like Calvin Ridley? Right. Well, if they hit on a tackle, was he going to play over Jonah Williams? They didn't need it. It would mean they didn't need those bridge guys. So, yeah, I'm still just like, the draft's going to make or break it, and the draft makes or breaks any NFL offseason. Yep. But the thing is, it would have been nice for them to have some sort of floor. On top of that, at least, you know, the draft's going to set the ceiling, but could they have gotten back to being a 6-7-8 win team with some targeted free agent additions? I still believe that, and they elected not to do that. So it's all on the draft. That's still how I feel. And look, as a draft person, part of me loves it, but it's also, I mean, you know, if the draft doesn't go well,
it's scary.
It's a major, major setback.
Yeah. It's all those, you know, the doors you keep talking about. You have to just keep opening these doors with the draft, and you never know.
Well, it's not so much the doors. It's more like, and there's a report today that the Patriots aren't planning on trading out of three, which means that quarterback, right? It's like, is there going to be enough around Drake May where we can get an actual evaluation of him? Or is this going to be like Mac Jones again, where it's this constant bickering and fighting of, yeah, he's not playing well, but also look at what he has around him. And yeah, he's not playing well, but he's getting pressured 10 times a game because the left tackle sucks. Or yeah, he's not playing well, but you know, three of the last picks he's thrown were right off the hands of a receiver. We're right off two palms. So I hope it's not that again. I feel like that's what they could have bought themselves some distance from, some breathing room from, was, all right, at least we know there's actual NFL players in place around him, like starting caliber NFL players, and we can get a more full evaluation of him, and we can really just focus on his development. Now it's all development and evaluation together, which definitely can go well. There definitely is upside there, but it's also everything becomes a lot more, you know, one thing falls off and the whole thing can kind of slide with it.
Yep. Yeah. And like, I know we talk about the receiver position a lot. We all want the top receiver, but I think I'm still a little more worried right now about like the left tackle spot. And we can talk Big Mike and right tackle in a bit here, but like, at least they have like Kendrick Bourne, KJ Osborne. We saw Pop Douglas last year. Hunter Henry's a reliable target. Like, they have some reliable veterans, but the left tackle situation right now is just a big question mark. Is it going to be a core four who hasn't played since college, which was 5-6 years ago? There was the report, I think it was the Herald, that said if needed, he could do that, or they believe, the coaching staff believes he could do that. But we both agree, like, that's got to be worst case scenario, that you're moving a core of four back to left tackle. So you might just be banking on a rookie at this point, because all the other guys are off, they're signed off free agency. So that's the spot to me that I'm looking at this like, okay, what's the plan here? Is it just going to be a rookie, you know, at pick 34 and you're confident that he's protecting your rookie quarterback's blindside, or do they have something else up their sleeve here? So that's the spot that I'm kind of concerned about.
I just want to bring this comment up real quick. Tarrant says, drafting wasn't great in the past, but this isn't the same regime. The sky's falling concern seems a bit much. This is something I think Patriots fans are losing track of, is that, you know, because I talk to people and they're like, well, what do you mean you're going to hit on three draft picks? And what do you mean they're going to hit on a receiver? Have you seen them draft and develop receivers? And it's like, this is why, for everybody saying, oh, you know, why'd you fire Bill and the free agency plan's the same? I don't think the whole free agency plan is why Bill's not here. I don't think the in-game coaching is why Bill's not here anymore. The draft is why Bill's not here anymore. So the draft is still a risk, yes, but I think Patriots fans got, and I don't necessarily blame us. I think Patriots fans got so used to not expecting anything from the draft. And if anybody contribute, you know, they knew there'd be one or two guys in there that would contribute, but it could be the seventh round pick as much as it could be the first round pick, right? And anything you got from a rookie was a cherry on top, was a bonus. You couldn't count on it. That's not how normal NFL teams operate. That's not how they view it. You're not expecting to hit every pick, but there is an expectation. I had somebody tell me once, like, a good draft, a good, solid, you pat yourself on the back, job well done draft is, you hit on your first round pick, you hit on one of your two day two picks. If you have more than two, you hit on over 50%. So, you know, if you have three, you hit on two of them. If you have four, you hit on three of them, right? You're basically allowed one bust on day two. And then you find one or two, depending on how many picks you have, you know, rotational or better players on day three. So you should have a starter, blue chip player in round one. That's the expectation. A functional starter by the end of year one on day two, at least one of those guys, if not two, and then just playable players, one, two, or three on day three, depending on how many picks you have. For the Patriots this year, they're scheduled to have five, so it's two and a half, so two or three players. Like, that's a good draft. Now, there's where this gets tricky is based on the way they've done things. I don't know that just that draft, it might be enough, but they need to have, you know, the holy grail of drafts is the 2017 Saints draft, which is, and I'm not leaving anybody out here. It's not like these are guys and there were other misses in between. This is the whole draft. Marshawn Lattimore, Ryan Ramczyk, Marcus Williams, Alvin Kamara, Alex Anzalone, Trey Hendrickson, Al-Kadeem Muhammad. Just dudes, just haul. All dudes, you know, to different degrees, but those are all guys that can play. I think you're leaning more towards the Patriots kind of need to be in that camp now than just the average good draft.
Yeah.
And I don't know, actually. We can do this exercise. When's the last time the Patriots had what would be considered a textbook good draft?
I just had the all the draft history up as you were explaining that, and I was trying to go through and seeing like what fits that qualifying. Well, I mean, last year Gonzalez, I know it's too early to make an
assumption. You need Gonzalez, yeah. Draft. But if so last year would be good. Let's say Gonzalez picks up where he left off last year, right? And he becomes that player and he becomes the player we think he'll be. You did get one functional starter, we think, in the second round on day two and Keon White. So you went 1 of 2. And then did you get 2 or 3 play? I had a lot of day three picks. It's probably more like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Yeah, you really need to hit on like 4 of your day two picks here, 3 or 4. They got Bryce Behringer, DeMario Douglas. So they were, that was an okay to good draft. That was like on the lower end of a good draft.
Yep.
Before that,
it might be a while.
No, I mean, 2020, they go Duggar, Uche, Jennings off the top, but they didn't find the day three guys.
They got Big Mike.
Oh, actually, they did. Eh, so you could maybe, that one's weird because there's no first round pick.
Yeah.
You could call that a good draft. I think you could get away with calling that a good draft. Before that, yeah, you got to go. I mean, 2013, Jamie Collins, Logan Ryan, Daron Harmon, they only had 6 picks. So to get those 3 guys in 6 picks is solid, but like a textbook, good draft. Again, Chandler Jones, Dante Hightower is a great draft, but that's a unique setup where they had 2 first-round picks.
They had Nate Solder in the first round.
Yeah.
Shane Vereen and Steven Ridley on day 2.
Yeah.
Surrounded by Razi Dowling and Ryan Nallet, and then they hit Marcus Cannon in the 5th
round. Yeah, so that's like a textbook solid draft.
Yeah.
But it's been, it's not like a perfect way to measure. Because again, if your first round pick is like a Hall of Famer and then you're both your day two picks are good and you didn't hit on anybody on day three, it's like, oh, you didn't get the day three picks, so it doesn't qualify. It's like, no, that's not like that is, yes, a good draft. It's just, that's kind of a baseline to go off of is, did you check those? If you checked all 3 of those boxes, you probably had a good draft. There's other ways to have a good draft, but that's kind of the default.
Yeah. Like you could be like the Lions last year and just have 4 day two picks and just, or yeah, 4 picks in the first 2 rounds and just absolutely knock all of them out of the park. And then
exactly.
Like, who cares what they took in the 5th or 7th round there. So yes, right. But yeah, they obviously, no secret, they obviously need a good draft. They got to hit at 3 and then, I mean, you hope they could hit at 34 and 68, but that's how they're going to dig themselves out of this whole draft and develop. So let's take a very quick break, end our draft talk there for the moment, and we can hear from our friends over at Prize Picks.
Football season may be over, but the action on the floor is heating up. Whether it's a tournament season or the fight for a playoff home court, there's no shortage of high-stakes basketball moments this time of year. Get in on the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can turn your hoops knowledge into serious cash. Testing my skills on Prize Picks this season is the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $1,000 with just a few taps. Prize Picks is really simple to play, and I can make my picks and submit my entry in less than 60 seconds. Download the app today and use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Use the code CLNS for the first deposit match up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
All right. Before we get to some other news, someone commented Judon isn't even recruiting anymore. Is that a good thing that he's not recruiting?
Well, Juwan Bentley like just hit him with a all-time stray. So that probably checked him out a little bit.
I mean, the hit rate has not been good for GM Judon. I think, what do we only credit him with Chris Board last year?
Yeah. So,
hasn't been, maybe that's a good thing that he stopped recruiting. But a few other notes that impact Patriots over the weekend, over the past few days. One, we kind of touched on it briefly. Michael Winnu. Ian Rappaport reported that he's going to be the right tackle next year. That seemed like where this was headed after they, after they re-signed him. But Big Mike at right tackle. So now obviously we need to see the left tackle situation. But I don't know. I think he's better at guard, obviously, but that's his natural position. But you need a tackle. He's just a really good player. Now he has a whole offseason to train at tackle too. So I might have preferred keeping him at guard and for the long haul maybe, but I think it's going to be fine that you have City at right guard and Mike out there at tackle.
I actually like the plan to keep him at right tackle long term. First off, like you said, it's just a more valuable position. And while he is slightly better as a guard right now, I think the drop off is negligible when you consider the importance of tackle versus guard. Also, this is a guy that he's only played. There's only been one season in his 4 years where he's only taken snaps at one position. Most seasons he's taken snaps at three or four. So he hasn't gotten a, you know, guard he's good at because that's what he's naturally played. Like you said, he played it throughout college. He didn't play tackle since high school until 2020. He's never really gotten to work on being a tackle. And now he gets to do that. And I think that that could kind of close the gap between where he's at as a tackle and where he's at as a guard. He'll probably drop a little bit of weight, right? Work on his footwork, become a little fleeter on his feet. If he can do that, I mean, he can play tackle. He can do it. I believe he has the skill set. So I think allowing, you're right. Like, again, he is probably a better guard right now. Allowing him a full offseason to work a tackle, I think changes things. I think it'll be interesting to see what kind of growth he shows, especially again in the mobility of it all.
Yeah.
If he does that, they're going to look brilliant. And look, it's easier if you sign him as a tackle, you tell him he's going to play tackle and you get, you know, half a season into this thing and you realize it's not working. It's a lot easier to say, all right, this isn't working. We're moving you back to guard than to do this whole thing again, where he's playing guard and then halfway through the season, all right, going back outside to tackle. And then it's that whole, you know, let him prepare for a position he's a little less prepared for. And then if you have to put him back where he's more of a natural fit, that's a lot easier of an adjustment.
Yeah. Yeah. That was my whole thing. Like he's a good tackle, but I think the one thing that gave him some issues was some of those faster rushers that could, you know, get around him. Like he's a big guy. He's a guard. He's got a guard body. But if you give him a full off season and say, you're going to be the right tackle moving forward, maybe he loses some weight or he can work on his footwork more and then he can handle that better. And I mean, he had issues, like that was his one issue, and he still, like, the pressures and sacks he allowed was, you know, very minimal last year. So that was just the one kind of nitpick thing. And now you give him a full offseason and he might clean that kind of area up. Right. So a winning right tackle again, we'll see whatever they have plans in store for the left tackle. But that was all the Patriots news. Players on the team, players signed, but some other news around the league that could have an impact on the Patriots. We can start with Justin Fields. He was officially traded from Chicago to the Pittsburgh Steelers for a 6th-round pick that could, I think, elevate to a 4th, depending on playing time. So we can officially stop the Justin Fields to the Patriots talk, but I think we are both kind of in agreement on that one, that we weren't exactly interested in Fields to be the guy under center for the Patriots next year anyway.
And shout out to all the people. Why don't you just trade a second for Fields? Why don't you just trade a second for Fields? Because he was never worth that. He was never, ever worth that. Pittsburgh's a good spot for him, honestly. I think he gets to go there. Learn behind Russell Wilson, whatever that accounts for. But really, kind of get to work with coaching staff, reset himself, hit the market next year. He may get a chance to start. I mean, Russ is old. Who knows? It never made sense here. Because the Patriots are in it for such a long term, he's not a long term option, and you either want to be on the top or the bottom. You either want to be truly building towards something, or at the bottom and in a chance to get those premium picks and reset. Justin Fields coming here and winning you 7-8 games doesn't do a ton, because I just don't think with the pieces in place he was going to be able to have. Everybody points to Baker Mayfield, and can he be this guy's Baker Mayfield? This year's Baker Mayfield, right? Baker was done. He was dead to the NFL. And then boom, he comes back, leads the Bucs to a division and gets his big contract. Well, he was also throwing to Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. And that's not exactly who Justin Fields would be throwing to here. And he wouldn't exactly be sitting behind Tristan Wirfs in the pocket either. I don't think that kind of reset was possible with him. I do still think he has some talent, and I think he'd be their most talented quarterback. But now you're going from, without knowing the draft, 4 to 5 wins to 7 to 8. And if you're going to increase and get into that middle tier, I'd rather do it with Drake May or Jane Daniels, where you're building to something, than, all right, Justin Fields won us 8 games. He only won us 8 games, so we're not going to re-sign him. But now we're not in position to draft a quarterback. So that just, it never made sense to me for the Patriots. It's not a Justin Fields take. It's just where the Patriots are. It never made sense.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it made great sense for a team like the Steelers, right? Who they just traded Kenny right. Pickett. We'll see what Russell Wilson can give them, if anything, at this
they
point.
Need a, the Steelers needed a backup quarterback. And look, I wouldn't have traded for Russ either. I think I was dumb on the Steelers part. But they did it, and from there moving on, yes, you want a high-level backup, and that's what Fields is at this point. So it makes sense for them.
Yeah, and they're a team that will be perfectly fine going 9-8 every year as long as Tomlin goes above 500. So, yeah, Justin Fields in Pittsburgh, so he is off the market there for the Patriots. The other kind of big trade was the Minnesota Vikings. They traded up from 42. They had the 42nd pick in the second round, and they moved up with the Houston Texans to get a second first rounder, the 23rd overall pick. So the Vikings now have the 11th and the 23 overall pick in the first round of this year's draft. They obviously need a quarterback after Kirk Cousins left. I think Sam Darnold is the top guy on their roster. They've had tons of ties to, you know, Drake May, their Josh McCown, who's their quarterback's coach, coached Drake May in high school. Seems like they're pretty interested in JJ McCarthy, but it's just, can they move up to actually get one of those guys? And, you know, everyone, Patriots, obviously, with the number three pick, a lot of eyeballs to them. So I know, you know, 11 and 23 on most of the trade value charts, that's an overpay to get up to number three. But if a team's coming up for a quarterback, you're going to want maybe an extra first round pick or a second round pick next year too. So but it doesn't seem, based off the reports, that the Patriots are set to even kind of consider that. It seems like they're still kind of locked into a quarterback and would have to really be blown away to move out of that pick. But Minnesota now with two first rounders, they're gonna, seems like they have something in mind. You don't just blindly trade up to 23 like that, I feel like, unless you have something else you're about to do. But we'll kind of see what happens there.
Well, we can hit the Brian Windhorst, right? Yeah. Why would they do that? What's going on in Minnesota?
Didn't their GM today said, like, we like someone who's in the 23 pick range or something? It's like, okay, man.
All right. So what's going on in Minnesota, right? They're clearly trying to move up. The report is today none of the top three teams want to move up, and that means to me Minnesota's not offering enough. And like you said, throw the trade chart the hell out the window here, because – if you're the Patriots and you truly believe in the quarterbacks that can be there at three, or if you don't, lie, say you do. Or not even. Like, Minnesota, if they want to move up, they believe that they've identified a franchise quarterback, right? Whether you have as the Patriots or not, you know Minnesota has this guy as a franchise quarterback. I'm going to use Drake May here just because we think Jane Daniels is going second overall, but you fill in Jane Daniels, it's all still the same. Why would you not? If you're the Patriots, Minnesota thinks they have a Super Bowl. Minnesota thinks if you're willing to give up this kind of capital to get up there, you believe that quarterback is going to win you a Super Bowl. And if you're a GM, if you're a head coach, job security for a decade plus, right? This is how valuable that guy is to Minnesota. And he might be just as valuable to the Patriots, but even if he's not, why would you not rake them over the coals? How bad do you want the Super Bowl? How bad do you want to win a Super Bowl? You also have historical context on your side. The Niners made this same move for a quarterback 3 years ago, and it was three firsts and a third. If I'm the Patriots, that phone call starts with, all right, so you're going to give us three first-round picks, and then what? And if they say, what do you mean three first-round picks? I'm hanging the phone up. It's that simple. They think they have a Super Bowl on the board. And if you're the Patriots, and you also think there's a Super Bowl on the board, you believe Drake May, Jane Daniels, one of them, is going to ride a duck boat through the streets of Boston someday. Why would you give that up? And if you are going to give it up, they better make it worth your while. What amount of picks would be worth losing your Super Bowl winning quarterback? Five? Six? So I don't see, if you're the Patriots, how you take 11-23 and call it a day. That would be, it'd be bad. That would be bad. That would be a bad job of trading. You don't need to make the trade. Even if you don't like the quarterback, trade down to six. Go to the Giants. And if you're going to get two firsts, because the Giants will give you a six and a future first, which is probably going to be pretty valuable. Because even if they get the quarterback, the rest of that roster kind of sucks. If I'm going to get two firsts, I'd rather have the sixth overall pick this year and probably a top 10 pick next year than just 11 and 23 this year. So even if you don't believe in the quarterback, it's too far to trade down. Unless they're going to really make it worth their while and, you know, this whole boatload of future first and you get the Niners package, you get this King's ransom. So let's go back to Minnesota. Why would Minnesota do this if they can't go up to three? I think it's J.J. McCarthy. I think they want to get up to five or six. That's probably it. They also might, like Michael Penix, and stick at 11 and they just wanted two firsts. You want to know my tinfoil hat conspiracy theory idea?
Let's hear it.
So all these people talking about trading Justin Jefferson, right? Can they move Justin Jefferson to move up to three? That would, I'm not saying it can't happen, but it would really surprise me because if you're moving up to take a quarterback, the best thing you can have for a young quarterback is a star receiver. So Jefferson, Addison, or left tackle, Slater, I don't think they're going to be involved here. I don't. So everybody's conspiracy theory goes to Justin Jefferson to the Pats, right? No. The real conspiracy theory doesn't involve the Patriots. It involves the fifth overall pick. And it does not involve the Vikings trading up to the fifth overall pick. It involves, again, conspiracy theory. But hang with me here because Jim Harbaugh is a lunatic. 11, 23, 2025 first, 2026 first, to LA, Justin Herbert, back to Minnesota. Vikings have their quarterback. They get Herbert and Jefferson. And now Harbaugh gets J.J. McCarthy, who we won't shut up about how much he loves. And then he has two more first-round picks. So he gets him at five because they keep five. And then he gets 11 and 23 to take, you know, a couple pass catchers to replace Mike Evans and Keenan Allen, whoever that is. Brian Thomas, A.D. Mitchell, Brock Bowers. If Adunze falls, like
Blake Corum and Roman Wilson.
Or Blake Corum, right? Or Blake Corum and Roman Wilson. So that is, the Harbaugh agenda knows no limits. Would I bet on that? It's probably like a million to one odds, so I'll put a penny on it. But like, I don't think that's going to happen. But if we're going to get nuts talking about this pick, you can do a lot better getting nuts talking about this pick than Justin Jefferson. I will bring it back to the Patriots though here real quick. The other thing that, and yeah, everybody in the comments, I know there's no way that's happening. That was just having some fun. Okay, it's the off season. Back on planet Earth though. And if we want to bring it back to the Patriots, the one thing that does interest me here is that was not that much for Minnesota to trade up from the 40s to the 20s. I think it was what, a second? It was the second. Was
second and 25. And yeah. Then they pick swapped. They moved like 50 spots back. So it was 23 and 232 for 42, 188, and a second and 25. So yeah,
right. That could so be call like, it a current and a future second to move up.
Like, yeah,
10 spots. So if you're the Patriots at 34, and you're trying to move up back to the back end of the first, I don't think you have to give up necessarily a future second to do that. Because again, you're not coming up from 43; you're coming up from 34. That's a whole 10 spots. Is it 34? Maybe like 180, 193 without the swap and a future third to move up. Like it costs less than I thought it would. It costs because we're all going off that Kyle Duggar trade or the Jags Bucks trade from last year. This was comparable to the Jags Bucks trade. It was a little bit less, but again, that kind of idea, maybe that's where this is relevant to the Patriots. It has nothing to do with Minnesota. But moving up from 34, the price is now set. And you can look at that and say, all right, this is what it costs to get up. It was 40. It was a 42 or 43?
42.
Okay. This is what it costs to get up nine spots. What if the Patriots only want to get up like five, right? What if they just want to get to like 26, 27, 28, where they can maybe get a guy like A.D. Mitchell or get a guy like a Troy Fatanu or a Marius Mims if he falls? The price is set. That definitely helps out. And the price is set at, you don't have to lose. What's the right way to phrase this? You net the same number of top 100 picks in this draft. You would still have, they'd be arranged differently and you'd be losing a day three pick and a pick next year, but you still get to make, you know, tackle, quarterback, tackle, receiver, those big three. You can still draft all three of those in the top 100.
Yeah. Yeah. That was something that definitely stood out to me, because we have floated that idea out there. I think you had that in your last mock draft, right? Them moving back up, whether it's like early 20s or late 20s, if one of those receivers, one of those tackles starts to fall. So, and they might not have to go as far up to 23, and they're also, their 34 pick is obviously more valuable than 42. I was just looking at the trade value chart, and 34 is worth about 33 more points on that. So that's like a kind of a late third rounder difference in value there. So that's definitely would be kind of interesting to see if that's how that path goes, if they like someone they want to go back up for. But like big picture, again, back, you know, Minnesota, two first round picks. It's, if you like the quarterback and you think he's the franchise quarterback, I don't think there's any amount of first round picks that would be worth giving away, you know, your franchise quarterback there. Especially, you know, the other thing is you'd go back to 11, right? So you might kind of miss out on the top blue chip players then at 11.
But you could be sitting there and the only blue chip player there is Dallas Turner.
Yeah. And so at that point, like, I'd rather be, if you're not sold on the quarterback, I'd be more interested in, you know, like the Giants at six, where you move back, but you can still take Neighbors, Adunze, or, you know, Fashanu or Joe Alt. Like, those blue chip talents are still there. So, you know, trading back to 11 is, I don't love that idea.
Oh, we do have a little bit of Patriots-ish related breaking news.
Trent Brown.
Yep, Trent Brown's going to visit the Bengals, so. I'm still not shutting that door, but yeah, he's probably not coming back.
Well, until they have a left tackle, I guess we can't shut that door. And Sione Takitaki is wearing number 16 this year. They gave out Malik Cunningham's number already.
Middle linebacker wearing 16?
Yeah, that's...
Don't love that.
Yeah, that doesn't... He posted a... on his Instagram, he posted a picture of him, an edit in it, and it does not look great. Not a fan of that.
I can see that. But,
so that is, yeah. Any last thoughts on the Vikings trade or trade up? Any other crazy hypotheticals?
No, that's pretty much it.
All right. So that was, you know, most of the news from the weekend. We can, you know, briefly end. We did get the offseason layout. We got some dates, some things to monitor on the schedule. Next week is the annual NFL coaching meeting, so we will hear from Gerard Mayo again. That is set for Monday, and then we got our off-season program. The dates, we're gonna start talking to, get in touch to some players more. We talked to Antonio Gibson today, but next month we'll start talking to more players, and then we have mini camp in May, which we will actually get to go to this year. That has never been open to the media
rookie
before.
Rookie
mini camp. So we'll get a day of that, and then OTAs start about the third week of May. So I think we get three or four full OTAs and then mandatory mini camp, as long as they don't cancel those, you know, or get them stripped away and stolen for violations. But
shout out Joe Judge.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm excited to see rookie mini camp. We've never
that'll
got
be cool.
That. But
that'll be fun.
Yeah, any thoughts on that or the OTAs and everything that's on the schedule?
I mean, just on rookie minicamp is going to be a cool experience. Just, you know, like you said, we haven't gotten to do that before. And that's not just us who are, you know, have been less on the beat. I don't think that was ever a thing under Belichick. So that will be cool to see, especially if there's a quarterback there, obviously. Yeah. And also, we never even get like the full rookie minicamp roster. So we'll get to see kind of what guys they have there on a tryout basis. And it's guys to, you know, keep an eye on as they go forward and building out the practice squad and things like that. So that should be a fun day. I'm looking forward to that. Yeah, OTAs, like you said, mini camp. I mean, it's going to be pretty typical. It'll be interesting to see which one they usually take the last day, either the last day of OTAs or the last day of mini camp. They don't like cancel it, but it's not a practice. You remember last year they went paintballing, or they've done that in the past. So if it's the last day of mini camp, the last event before we essentially go on summer vacation is going to be the Tom Brady ceremony, because mini camp is scheduled Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. The Brady ceremony is Wednesday night. And then if they cancel Thursday, it'll just be, what a send off, right? What a send off in the summer that would be.
Yeah. So Brady is 7 o'clock, Wednesday, June 6th. June 12th, 12 for Tom. I saw some people asking, you know, they said it was a ticketed event. We saw some people asking if they've done anything with tickets on sale yet. I I haven't seen anything or heard anything, so we're not sure how they're.
Well, I'm sure there'll be something coming from the team at some point. I will say, keep this in mind, that is scheduled to be Game 3 of the NBA Finals.
Oof.
So that night, which maybe they move it up, but yeah, something to keep an eye on there.
That would be Celtics playing and Tom Brady. We'll see everyone at the Harp after, right?
Right.
Especially if they cancel the last day of mandatory minicamp.
Oh, yeah.
They'd have to at that point if everyone's out partying. You know, we don't need the last day of minicamp. But yeah, that'll be obviously the Tom thing will be exciting. And then, you know, rookie minicamp will be fun to see how that's kind of structured. And even just OTAs, you know, in general, like, is Mayo going to run these things differently? Just the whole practice and training camp that'll be interesting to see. But yep, those are the off season dates. So anything else? You got anything else? Or
I don't think, cause we switched to a new, new like back end here that we do these shows on. I don't know if they moved the Boston Sports Minute banner. I don't think they did. I didn't even think of it. We got to ask Amit that, but I think real quick, you know, bring up the Celtics, the Bruins, and obviously the Red Sox are right around the corner. We have some time here. It is about the time we usually bring it back. What's good with your Boston Bruins, Brian Hines? Or are we supposed to believe in them again or no?
I don't know. They're so conflicting. I feel like they're, you know, one week they're the best team in the league, and then the next week they're struggling. I'm at this point, it's the goalie rotation, right? Like, that's the thing that we're all just kind of hanging our hats on at this point. We'll see. Like, obviously, can you go far in the playoffs without a top line center? But it's the goalie rotation. It seems like they're really committed to it. It seems like they're going to roll with it in the playoffs. But, you know, what happens if Linus Ullmark loses game one and then Jeremy Swayman, you know, pitches a shutout and wins game two? Are they just gonna, you know, ditch it, or are they gonna stay with the guy who's hot? So I think they're gonna keep going with it, and it'll be interesting to see if it works. But yeah, at least we got the Maple Leafs, it looks like, in round one, so that should be a win. They might win a round this year, but we'll see after that.
Yeah, I'm still there's too much inconsistency with them for me. There's still guys don't look like they're comfortable playing with each other on the ice. And that's the most concerning thing for me. And I just can't get on it. But granted, the last couple of years, they've given us every reason to buy in, and then it hasn't paid off. This is the year that they kind of look like a mess, and watch, they'll make a deep run. So
I will say, I was happy that they didn't like go all in at the trade deadline, and they just kind of, you know, they added, you know, Pat Maroon, right? I thought was a good ad, because he needed a kind of a tough, you know, they needed more physicality on the bottom lines there. And, you know, we'll see Andrew Peak. I didn't love like the third rounder and no retention, but seems like they obviously like the player a lot, and they have had a good history of pro scouting. And it seems like, you know, he had a good first two games with them. So we'll see with that. But I was happy they didn't kind of, you know, keep pushing first round picks, and they didn't trade any of their top, you know, prospects. Lauri and Pacher are still here, and they're just, you know, this was always going to be kind of a transition year, and I'm happy they're just kind of ride it out and see how far the guys on the team can take them in the playoffs.
You got any Celtics thoughts?
Sam Hauser is the best shooter.
Adam Silver shut him down last night.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing. Like, it's championship or bust for them, right? It's like they're the best team in basketball, so let's just see it when it counts in the playoffs. That's really all I got for them.
Yeah, I'm the same way as you. I like, and people say this is a negative take. I don't think it is. Anything short of a championship is a disappointment. This team's a wagon. They're the best team in basketball. Now, the Nuggets game a couple weeks ago is concerning to me, because they are going to have to figure out a way to beat that team. They've got to rest guys. Like, Tatum's out tonight. I guess Porzingis is playing. I think the game's going on right now, right? Is it 7 or 8 o'clock tip tonight?
I am not sure. Is that why everyone was
45?
Is that why everyone was talking about? I saw a bunch of quotes on Twitter about Tatum, like how he always plays, and people were posting like how he's played the most minutes. Is that why they were all posting that? Because he's
probably resting? Yeah. No, but I don't need to watch Kristaps Porzingis against the Washington Wizards on March 16th. I don't care. I don't like, is he a fun player to watch? Yes, this is nothing against Kristaps Porzingis. I don't need to watch Jason Tatum against the Detroit Pistons on a Monday night in mid-March. I don't. I really don't. I have no desire to watch that. I don't. The Celtics are boring the crap out of me right now, and I couldn't be happier. Sit everybody down, get them rested, get them healthy, and come out with your hair on fire when the playoffs start. So, you know, Tatum was still in that game when they were up 40 against the Wizards the other night. Hate that. Hate that. And, like, Joe's resting guys from game to game, but within the game when they get up big, he's not resting guys. That's got to go. That's got to go. You need to minimize these guys' minutes as much as possible. 2-3 games before the playoffs start, end of the regular season, you ramp them back up, you get them going again. But they've got to get it going. Or they've got to get guys rested so they can get it going in the playoffs. That's the big thing with me.
Yeah. I mean, they have, what, a 5-6 game lead in the East? Like, it seems like the one seed is theirs. So, like, use this time as an advantage and get some guys rested and healthy, because the playoffs are it's a grind. So any rest you can get them is a bonus. But who's are the Bucks still the biggest threat in the East, would you say?
I don't think there is a big threat in the East. I guess it's the Bucks.
But it's like, yeah, like the Knicks, the Cavs, I don't know. It's the Nuggets. Red Sox. Much, yeah. Anything? Any rants on the Red Sox? I mean, they haven't done anything to talk about except.
Yeah, I like part of me doesn't want to talk about them because they don't deserve it. It's pathetic. It's embarrassing.
The most exciting game of the year was probably over the weekend when it was the development team, and it was like Roman Anthony and Marcelo Meyer and Kyle Teal, and they're all playing, and you're like, okay, this is the team we'll see in two years or whatever. But yeah, there's nothing to really talk about or get excited with that team.
John Henry should be embarrassed. He should, and he is not. He's clearly not capable of it, but he should be embarrassed. He should be embarrassed that he's turned this institution. I was on with Felger 2 weeks ago. We were talking about this. The fact that this is Boston. We are in Boston. We're in the Boston media market. And you cannot have a real baseball conversation about the Boston Red Sox. And when I say baseball conversation, I mean, you know, who should be their top four hitters? Who should it lead off? What should their starting rotation be? How should they line it up for opening day? Like that kind of thing. You can't, because one, nobody cares. And I think part of the reason they don't care is nobody knows who these players are. Because there's, and part of that's a reflection of the sport, but baseball was always followed here, and they've made it impossible to follow with this roster churn on these bums that nobody wants to care about. It's sad. It's pathetic. I'm disappointed as a, and people, this comes off as me hating the Red Sox. I love the Red Sox. I am upset that something I care about. I love in the summer getting home, putting the Red Sox game on, and just kind of having it on in the background, make dinner. It's like great, great vibe. Or like going down to the beach, bringing the radio down, listening to the Red Sox. Great. I like following the Red Sox. The fact they have made this team borderline unfollowable is a disgrace. And John Henry should not be able, and he got booed at the Winter Classic. Good. Should not be able to show his face in Boston as long as the team is in this condition. Period. Full stop. This is a Boston institution. They have run into the ground. And it's a damn shame. Jordan Montgomery is down the street waiting to get signed
by a team that
desperately needs pitching. And no, they won't do it. Because it's, even though it would probably be a team-friendly deal, it's not team friendly enough. So yeah, I'm very disappointed in my Boston Red Sox. I'll still make a trip to Fenway once or twice this year. I mean, my family's been going my family's gone every year for decades. I'm not going to break that chain, but my friend is, you know, he has season tickets. He already paid for them. I wouldn't have done that. Maybe I'll just go on his ticket, so John Henry doesn't get my money. Figure out a way to bring my own hot dog.
Yeah, literally. They haven't named an opening day starter yet, right? I'm not guessing it's going to be Bayo, but
I think it's going to be not Bayo, Pivetta.
Pivetta, okay.
They generally go, Core generally goes with the veteran.
Yeah,
that's generally how he's done it. My guess is it's going to be Pivetta, then Bayo, then who the hell knows?
Who knows after?
But they might go with a bullpen game. They might start off with a bullpen game the way they run this freaking thing.
Poor Cora. I feel like he's like already checked out too. He just knows what's going to happen. I still, I love how their whole strategy is, you know, we're going to wait for the farm system, and that wave is going to lead them to the next success. And then they fired the guy who drafted all those guys. It's like, I don't know. They needed a fall guy, I guess. But what they start 10 days, 2 weeks. So
yeah,
who knows? Maybe they'll surprise us. Probably not. But we can wrap it up there with some Boston sports talk. We will be back later this week. Hopefully we have more Patriots news. Or are we doing mock draft?
Yep, every Thursday now until the draft. So that'll probably be, I got to talk to you off the air, that'll probably be an early afternoon show, if you can do it, Brian.
Thursday? Yeah. We'll probably do that.
So, but if not, you know, just subscribe to the YouTube channel. You can see it after the fact. But yeah, no, mock draft every Thursday from here on out. That's the plan.
Fun stuff. So we will be back then. In the meantime, you can follow Alex on Twitter at RealAlexBarth. Head over to 985thesportshub.com to read his Patriots written coverage. And you can follow me on Twitter at IamBrianHines and head over to PatsPulpit.com to read my work over there as well. Thank you all, as always, for tuning in with us tonight. And we will see you guys later this week.
Bye.